So my name is Ava Frederick, and I'll be interviewing my grandfather, Tom Supries. Okay. Where were our ancestors born, and when did they arrive to the U.S.?
On my father's side, our ancestors that we can go back to came from Poland. They were born in L.A. around 1870s, both my grandfather and my grandmother. And they came from Poland in around the early 1900s, I would say probably around 1910, 1912. And they lived in the coal mines. They went to the coal mine regions, and that's where they lived and died, because my grandmother's first husband was killed in a mine accident, actually wasn't killed in the accident, but afterwards he died from it, and they already had five children. And my grandmother had to scruff to do whatever she had to make a living. My uncles and my aunts, they all worked. My uncle stopped going to school in the third grade and became a breaker boy. And it was a tough life. And they picked things from the mountains, blueberries and all that type of thing, and sold them to make extra money. My grandmother took in wash, did all that type to survive. And then when she met her second husband, who would be my grandfather, he was also working in the mines. He was a dynamiter, and then he knew it was time to get out of there, and then he came down into this area, but he was also a blacksmith by trade. And so he ended up working in a foundry down in Carteret, New Jersey, and then from there they moved up, because the rest of the family had moved down and became farmers down in the Slate Belt area. And my mother's side, they came from Cornwall, England, and Wales, because they were slaters and they worked in the slate quarries.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So, when you were growing up, did you like going to school? Why or why not?
Actually, I hated going to school. I went to Catholic school, and I did not start in kindergarten. I started when I was 5 years old in first grade.
Really?
Yes. And our school was not built yet. And we were in the front living room of the Sisters Convent. And that's where we had our first grade. And my sister, she went out to the basement of another church where they curtained everything off. And they had the other grades, 3, 4, and 5. Second grade was in the basement of another church. And the sister, she took care of the kids, the best she could. We got a great education. We did not learn to print. We did cursive right away. We did the Palmer method.
Really?
Yep. And then in halfway through that year, in January, they decided they were going to have a kindergarten. And the kindergarten was an 8-foot table in the same room we were in. And these kids would sit there and they would color and they would do all this stuff. And it was all kind of neat. We thought, why did they get to do that? And we did. And I didn't really get along too well with the nun in the first grade. Not that that's a surprise, but the new school had been built, and then in the second grade, I remember pulling up to the new school, and I looked out, and there was this sister. I thought she was transferred, and I thought to myself, my heart just sank. I thought, oh my God, she's still here, and she's still alive. So finally, I went in, and she said, "Nice to see you, Thomas." And I said, "Yes, nice to see you too, sister." Yeah. And so I went through. But my older sister, Judy, was very smart, but she worked hard. She studied all the time. She graduated valedictorian. And going through school, she was 5 years older than me, and she did so well. And then here I come along not really wanting to do anything. And they would say, "Judy, you're not like your sister." I said, "No, my sister's name is Judy. Mine isn't." And boy, I used to make them mad, so I didn't really get along. But then I got in high school and I did all right. And then one day, I was in high school, and we had to memorize. And memorize a lot of stuff, especially in English class. And the sister was calling out names, and she called them out randomly, and you had to stand, and you had to recite. And I looked around, and I noticed that a lot of people were scared to be called on because nobody memorized it. So at that point, I thought to myself, gee whiz, I can do that. So I started to study. And so instead of her waiting to call, I would raise my hand and she'd call on me and I'd recite. So my sister Judy ended up being valedictorian, and you know, I had, like I said, we would have to memorize these things. But it really struck me when, and this was a major turning point for me, I had good friends. Well, I had a great class,
mm-hmm.
and we were all friends. We were a small class. We had a grand total of like 43 kids in our class. And my good friend Joe Romano, who's a doctor now, he's out in Pittsburgh, we were in 11th grade, and he said to me, he goes, "So where are you going to college?" And I didn't know what to say, and I said, I don't know. I didn't want to sound stupid.
Yeah.
And he I said, "Gee," he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Oh, I'm going to try for Temple." He said, "No, listen," he's telling me this. So then afterwards, it really struck me, because I thought to myself, he thinks I'm smart enough to go to college. And I never considered myself smart enough to go to college.
Yeah.
As a lot of kids don't, as I come to find out from teaching. So and that's when I started to notice that the kids were scared to raise their hand for things, and I started to study. Well, from just being an average, you know, C, D student on occasion, I ended up moving up into B's and A's. And yeah. I moved up into the second honors, and then, but I just would always just miss first honors. And that was okay, because I was working, but I found out the value of study. And after that, that's when, it's not that I like school, but I knew I could do it.
Yeah.
See. So then, now at this point, I end up going in and I have a bachelor's and I have two master's degrees. So I did go through school.
A lot of it. Wow. What are your bachelor and master's degrees in?
My bachelor in music, I have a bachelor of music degree in music composition. I got that from Berklee College of Music in Boston. I started out at Penn State at the Schuylkill Haven campus, and that I went in as a liberal arts major. And it was okay, but I knew it wasn't really what I was wanted.
Yeah.
And then, so that's when I transferred, and I had won a scholarship, a small scholarship to go, but it was enough to know that, gee, if I could get a scholarship to go, then I can do this.
Yeah.
And that's where I got my bachelor's degree.
Wow.
And then when I got out, I came back to this area, and I was private teaching, but I also taught over at Blair Academy in Blairstown, New Jersey, a private school. I started the guitar course as an extra credit up at East Stroudsburg University. I was also teaching at all the different music stores. And then I was also playing out on the occasion there, because I wasn't crazy about playing out, because I worked my way through college up in Berklee.
Yeah.
And I was what we used to call the underwater band. And the reason that we were called the underwater bands was because we played in all the dives in Boston. I mean, and I can remember vividly being up on the bandstand while everybody's drinking, getting drunk, having a great time, and looking out through the cloud. And it was just like a cloud of smoke. And I mean, there was like maybe only 4 feet of air between the people and the cloud. And I thought, I don't want to do this the rest of my life. But I like teaching. I mean, I like teaching guitar. I taught at Berklee for there was a grant to teach kids at poverty level who wanted to learn a music instrument. So I taught that. And that was really where I kind of got turned on to the teaching of guitar itself.
Really?
But my guitar teacher is the one that taught me.
So who was the most influential person in your life?
I didn't have just one, because it all depended on what phase of my life I was in. Yeah, it is true that there is always an influential person in your life, someone who's there behind the other people that are there, but there's always people that come to the forefront. And in my teenage years, the one that was the most influential person for me was my guitar teacher, Eddie Alkire from Easton. And he was really quite a guy. And it was really, I really liked, being in love in music and playing the guitar and him teaching me. I liked what he did. And that was part of the reason why I went to Berklee, because that's what I wanted to do. But as economies change and you start to really see what life is all about, he had already been through all that. He had been through the playing, and he played on the radio in those days. It was before TV and all these things. But when I got out, it was different. But I wanted to point into the teaching. And then one of the things that I really learned, you know, as I went through, when I was doing my college course, there were certain teachers that were more approachable and more knowledgeable about things, who would say certain things that I could put me in another direction, you know, and it's pretty varied within that. And then, but I always have to say, one of the most influential people for me was my mom and dad. And it wasn't so much of what they said to me as much as I always knew I had the security of them. Because sadly today, there are so many people who don't have the same mother and father under the same roof. But I did. I was fortunate like that. And I had brothers and sisters. And so, and even though you would do stuff, you about get your head cracked open. it was there. But also, I had, having been in Catholic school, I had a good moral sense.
Yeah.
It wasn't just because of the teaching saying, this is what you have to do with, you know, heaven, hell. It wasn't that. We were taught morality. And it's the difference between right and wrong.
Yeah.
And I learned that. And I have to honestly say, throughout my entire career, and especially being a musician, I never had one drug. And the reason being because, and I have to honestly say, it was because of my belief, my morality, mm-hmm. that I didn't believe in that. And when it came to things, like I was always very honest, I would never cheat. That was all because of the morality that I was taught, not just from school through the sisters, but also through how my parents were. And you know, my mom died. She died young. She was like 66. And then my dad, he just passed away, you know, at 95. And it was interesting, as I learned more about their lives, how much tougher they had it than what I ever had.
Yeah.
You know, so made a big difference. So the life the life experiences came from different people. And it was at different times and different situations. But the core was always my mother and father.
Wow. So has your life turned out different from what you imagined as a teenager?
Yeah, because as a teenager, I really thought I played in a band. I was playing in bands. And I thought, this is what I really want to do. So when I went to Penn State, and I found out that really wasn't getting what I really wanted. That's how I transferred to Berkeley, and that was a great education, not just musically, but just people-wise. Because the joke was at that time, this is back in the late 60s, you know, you could never tell, the only way you could tell the difference between a Berkeley student and a homeless person was because we had IDs. You know, but it was just wonderful. I mean, to be in that artsy kind of thing, you know,
yeah.
And, you know, going to the jazz clubs and, you know, there was different, at that time there was coffee houses and, you know, it was just so artsy. It was all around. And Boston is known as the Athens of the United States because there are more schools in a 40 square mile area than anywhere else in the United States.
Really?
Yeah. So there's all kinds of things that you can do.
Yeah.
You can go over to Harvard, you can go to Boston College, you can go to Tufts, you can do all that stuff.
I mean, wow.
So, and they advertise different things that you could go. So it was a great thing. So, turning out, when I got out and I started doing all that stuff in the private teaching and all that, and I had gotten married and then DJs came in and that really cut it. And then they also put out these little keyboards, and people figured it was a cheap way out instead of giving their kids real lessons. things started to drop off, and the music changed. Music started to get more towards the punk rock and that kind of stuff. And so guitar was starting, I don't have to take lessons, I can do this.
Yeah.
So then I went into the retail part of the music business. I sold pianos and organs. I did that. And then when that kind of started to sour, I went to, that's when I went back to college and did my first master's. I got my master's in education, and I knew that there wasn't a big market for music teachers because one music teacher covers maybe one school or more than one school. Mm-hmm. and they are there from the time they start to the time they die. But I always knew that there was reading, and I love to read, so I used my experience. I figured, if I can teach kids to read notes, I can teach them how to read words.
Yeah.
And so I became a reading specialist, and that's what I've done for 29 years.
Wow.
And then while I was in there, I was very fortunate. There was a federal grant written by Dr. Rodriguez in Puerto Rico for Allentown, Reading, and Bethlehem for people to become ESL teachers, English as a second language. And it was totally free. But because I was in East Stroudsburg, there was people didn't want to do it. So I said, hey, I'll do it. And they said, well, you know, what if we get an opening? Well, an opening came up, and I got my second master's for free. I just had to pay for my books.
Really?
Honest to God.
Wow.
That doesn't happen very often. So that moved me right up the pay scale, too.
Wow. Do you still, like, talk to any people that you have met from Berkeley?
Not too much, because, you know, when you're at Berkeley, they don't have a fraternity or anything.
Yeah.
If they do, they have it now. But I was there when its reputation was really hot, because they had the original teachers there that were, you know, made that school great. And what happened was, is that a majority of them have passed away now, because they were up in age. But I got the real Berkeley, which was really great. And when you're there, nobody cares how nice a guy you are or whatever. When you sit down to play, you either are or you're not. It's good or bad.
Really?
Yeah. And it's up to you. You know, you don't hang with people to get in the in crowd. Your playing is what gets you in the in crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're in a composition where you can do arrangements, that's what it is. That's the neat thing about an art school.
Yeah.
If you ever watch, like, Fame and that, those kids, they're friends, but they're competing against each other.
It's always a competition.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow. That's interesting. So, what are the most important lessons you have learned in life?
I have to tell you that, matter of fact, I ended up doing a speech about this, because while I was in retail, while I was selling pianos and organs, I took the Dale Carnegie course, the leadership course. And that is an outstanding course. If anybody, there's a course for somebody to take. You don't get college credit, you don't get anything like that, but if you really want to develop yourself, that's where you go. And because they develop your confidence and everything else through public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a great advantage for me. So I learned a lot in there, but I have to tell you, one time I was selling over at Westgate Mall, and I opened up the store. It was 10 o'clock in the morning, and the malls are dead at 10 o'clock. And there was this elderly man came up, and I had the player piano playing. And he was just looking there, and I thought to myself, well, I know he's probably not going to buy, but being a salesman, you always go up, you talk, make sure you're talking to everybody. And I spoke to him, and he told me some really, really interesting things. And he talked about when he was younger, how he was in the coal mine area, and as when he graduated from the fifth grade, he had to go down into the mines, and then he wanted to get out of the mine, so he asked his father, how do I do it? He says, well, you got to get more education. So he went back and finished eighth grade, still wasn't enough, finished high school. Then he ended up going to Lafayette, and he learned to design machinery for the
really?
Mines. Yeah. Now, he's telling me all this, right? And fortunately, I had a time to listen to it, because he told me one of the greatest things. Throughout his lifetime, he ended up, after he designed all the machinery for the mine, he asked them what they wanted him to do next, and he told them, well, nothing, you're out of a job. You did everything we wanted. So he said, geez, he went up, and he was looking around, and there was a sign in a music store, help wanted, so he took that. And the guy said, oh, I want you to go up. It was farther up in the coal region. He said, I have a store up there, but I need somebody to go up. So he went up there, and while he was up there managing and selling in the store, influenza broke out. People were dying from influenza.
What is that?
Yeah, that's the flu, but it was so bad. You know, I mean, when you got the flu, they didn't have the vaccines. Like, you get flu shots now, but
yeah.
I mean, you die from that stuff. And So he put the lock on the door and he came back because he was intending to get married, and he came back and the guy said, "What are you doing here?" And he told the boss, he said, "Well, they're dying of influenza up there." He said, "There's so many people have already died just on the street where the store is." He said, "You either get back up and open that or you're out of a job." And he says, "See ya." And he wondered what he was going to do. So he came down here to Allentown. Mm-hmm. And he had gotten married, and his he was sitting in like one of those, at those times they were like soda fountains, you know, like in the drugstore you go in and get a soda fountain. And he was having a cup of coffee, and he saw people coming in, going up to this one counter, and they're dropping stuff off and leaving and da-da-da. And he asked the guy, he says, "What are you doing back there?" He says, "Oh, I'm developing film. People are bringing film in here, and that's how we're developing the film from the cameras." And he goes, "Yeah." He says, "I got so much work." He says, "Well, I'm out of a job. I'd like to work." And the guy says, "Well, I can show that to you." So he says, "I'm doing all this." And he says, "I'm working and working." He says, "I'm doing." And he says, "Pretty soon," and he says, "you know, I've got, you know, my daughter's been born." He says, "I'm doing okay. But then I'm seeing this guy's making a lot of money on this stuff." So he said, "Well, I can do this. Why don't I have to work for him to make money?" He said, so he opened up his own photo developing store. And he had a lot of work. And then he started realizing that this is way back before the malls were here, but there was open spaces, mm-hmm. and there was like little shopping centers.
Yeah.
And what he did, he opened up these little kiosks, these little buildings, where you could drive in and drop off your film. You didn't have to park your car or do anything else. You could just drop it off, then come back in a couple days.
Oh.
And here, he opened up 19 locations. And what happened was, is that in those days, I don't remember what he told me the name of it was, but Photomat came in and bought all those stores from him.
Really?
Yeah. And then he said, he goes, "I got a good chunk of money for that." Mm-hmm. And he goes, "And you know, I've had, by this time I've got three children." And you know, he says, "My wife and I," he says, "you know, she always stayed by me." And he goes, "But I started to get bored. So what I did was, I went to, I was sitting down outside of it on Hamilton Street by the PPL building, because they used to have a little area where people would sit, you know, yeah. just outside." And he said, "I saw all these people, guys going in there and coming out." And he said, I asked the guy, I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Oh, I'm applying for a job." He said, "Oh, I'm not doing nothing." So he went in and he said, "I'm sitting there and I'm filling out this job application. I'm there with a clipboard, and a guy comes up, walks out of his offices and tells the secretary," he said, "don't take any more applications. I think I found the guy I want." And so he goes, "I said it out loud." He goes, "Well, I guess you don't want mine." He said, "I'm ready to do it." This guy said, "Well, let me see it." And he pulls the clipboard out of his hand, looks at it and says, "You're better than the other guy. You're the guy I want." This is true. And he said, "What do you want me to do?" He goes, "You have all this experience." He said, "You've dealt with people, but also," he said, "you've designed all this machinery." And he goes, "Conveyors, you know, the electrical hookups and all that." He said, "So," he goes, "I'll tell you what I designed. If you ever drive along the highways, and in between the highways and that median, in that grassy median, mm-hmm. you see like a lot of bushes, but you see like transformers and all those kinds of things for the electrical company." Mm-hmm. He says, "That's what I put in." He said, "I designed that so they could put lights along the highway and all that kind of stuff."
Wow.
Isn't that neat? So he's telling me this, and I mean, I'm really impressed. And he said, "You know," he goes, "I only had really a high school education and a couple years of college, just enough to be able to do what I needed to do, not a degree or anything." He said, "But if I would ever get an opportunity to talk to a high school class," he said, "I would tell them that you need to have the ability to change." And while I was teaching, I was sent from doing secondary down to elementary. And I remembered that, because I thought, "Oh my God, I got all these little kids I got to deal with," right? And I remember I was getting a gift from the school I was leaving, and I made this comment. I said, "Change is challenge, but challenge is opportunity." And that's true.
It is true.
And it's a great, it is a great way of thinking things. And he said, he goes, if he ever talked to a high school class, he said, you need to have the ability to change. You may go to school for something, but it doesn't mean you have to plow ahead on that area. He said, you might look off to the right or left and see something else. He said, you can go into there. He said, you expand your base. You got more opportunity. And he said, and then sadly, he said he had to get back to Muhlenberg Hospital at that time because his wife was passing away. But he had been there for so many hours, he had to get up and walk. And so he left. And that was the last I ever saw him.
Wow.
So that was one of the most influential things.
Wow.
And I still don't know his name. No, that's true. Don't know his name.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you relive your teenage years?
I would. I matter of fact, even now at my age, which I'll be 70 this year in December, I still feel like I'm 17.
Really?
And you know, when I get together with any of my classmates and that, everybody's the same. You know, we've had guys who've been in Vietnam vets. We've had guys who have become chemical engineers at Air Products. We've had, you know, people, you know, like myself, and we've had, you know, other guys who were just, they worked at the steel companies, but everybody's still the same.
Yeah.
And it's really great. I mean, I was very fortunate to have good class, and my older sister Judy and I have often talked because she went to the same schools I did. She said, you know, we were very fortunate. We had friends who came from good families, and they raised good families.
Mm-hmm.
So they were good people, and that's the way it was. I mean, when I was up in Rosetto, no matter whose house I was at, I had to sit down and eat.
Yeah.
Because they were that kind. They opened up their hearts mm-hmm. to that. And the same way in the Coleridge. It was that way. No.
Wow. How did you become interested in teaching?
I really, it was through Mr. Alkire, my music teacher. That I liked what he did. I liked learning that because I was, you know, obviously you like learning what you like. So, and I liked the way he did it. I mean, he taught, I was still working. I mean, I worked in the blouse mills and the, you know, all those things. I worked in the printing business. I was doing all that kind of stuff as a kid. You know, and I worked in my uncle's farms. I mean, that was all hard work stuff. And I liked what he did. I thought, wow, play the guitar and be able to teach kids and all that and make money on it, mm-hmm. you know, it seemed like a lot. And that's really how I really went to Berklee, because I thought, if I go to Berklee, I can be, you know, a good teacher and I can play. I can go out and I can play in these clubs. And then when I found out I didn't want to play in clubs, that's when I thought, boy, teaching is the area to go. And I was good at it. But then when that kind of started falling apart, my degree at Berklee was enough to get me into the Master's of Education, because you did not need a prior thing to take a Master's of Education. In other words, you didn't have to have educational credits to go on for your Master's in Education at that time. I don't know if you do now, but at that time you didn't have to. So I was good at it.
So when you went to Berklee, what was your major?
Composition.
Composition.
Yeah.
So what is that?
Composition is where you do composing and arranging.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, like if there is like the big bands you have in school, you know, your jazz bands, well, you write that, you do that, you arrange for that. In other words, like, you know, all the instruments, the arrangements for that. And then when you do the other type of composition, it's like whatever things you have in your head, you compose, and you can write for symphonic orchestra or small group or duet, voices, choir, all that kind of stuff.
So you can like write music.
Yes. And that's why that was my big plan for getting, after I finally retired and started to have some more time to myself.
So you like to write music and everything?
I love it, yeah.
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And you still had to play your instrument. My instrument was guitar. I mean, I was primarily a jazz guitarist, so yeah, that was my you know, instrument.
Yeah.
You know, but I didn't go. When you're at Berklee, you go one of three paths. You go either into, you know, major in your instrument, you go into a major in composition, or you go into a major of music education. And I didn't want to do music education. So, I always was afraid that if something happened where I couldn't play, I could still write. Mm-hmm. So that's why I took as many classes. Now, when you do that, your playing suffers because you spend so much time writing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm glad I did it. I'm really glad I did it.
When you went into Berklee, did you know how to play the piano?
I knew the notes.
No, okay.
But they make you take piano.
Really?
They do. And nobody ever does it. And if you could buy your way through it, you did. You could pay the guy off and you paid it, you know, because it had, you know, student teachers taking it. But it wasn't that so much. They realized that you needed to have a keyboard knowledge,
mm-hmm.
but you didn't have, unless, but if you weren't a piano player or whatever, you needed to have a functional knowledge of it so that you could sit down and play if you wanted to work stuff out, but not to be able to perform.
Wow.
But I picked that. I'll tell you where I picked most of that playing up. The way I play now is from selling pianos and organs.
Really?
Oh yeah, because I mean I could play. I mean my music theory was so strong. I mean that I knew exactly what I was going to do on a keyboard, so I could play, and that's why I was picking up tunes and doing all that stuff. So, and to play an organ at that time, when you play an organ, you're playing a keyboard orchestra.
Yeah.
Because it's all the instruments. So it was great.
Wow.